You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is sponsored by Codify, a California benefit corporation. Visit Codify at www.codify.com. Hello and welcome to the Archaeology Podcast, Episode 7. I'm Chris Webster.
And I'm April Camp Whitaker. On today's show, we are going to be interviewing archaeologist Colin Amundsen about his blog and podcast, Cooking with Archaeologists.
Let's dig a little deeper. All right, we're here for episode 7 of the archaeology show, and I first heard about Colin Amundsen when he actually messaged me on Facebook about the Archaeology Podcast Network, and that's when I found out that he has a podcast of his own, which we'll get into later, but first off, Colin, how's it going?
I'm well, Chris. Thanks.
Awesome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself as an archaeologist, and then we'll get into all the other fun stuff later.
Okay. I'm an archaeologist. I studied, when I was doing my PhD, I focused in on zoo archaeology. So I worked in Norway from starting in 2001 when I did my PhD project up in the Arctic region of Norway.
Nice.
And then I graduated in 2008 from the City University of New York. And from 2008 until today, I've been basically working in the field, mostly in Norway as a field archaeologist.
Okay. Is that where you live? Do you live up in Norway then?
No, I did for a while. I've lived in Norway for a while, but now I'm back in the States. I live in Maine.
Nice. I hear you guys are getting a lot of snow up there. This end of December as we're recording this.
Yeah. Well, today we didn't get any snow. I mean, other parts of Maine got snow, but I'm right on the coast, so we didn't get any snow. We got a lot of rain.
Right. Well, what I really wanted to talk to you about was your podcast called Cooking with Archaeologists. I first became aware of it as we're recording now, just less than a week ago. And I really liked it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the show is about, and then we'll talk about some of the guests you've had on.
Okay, cool. So the show is about, you know, just interviewing archaeologists, which in any level, I don't really care because everyone has their own view of archaeology. Everyone has gotten into it for their own reason. Whether you're a bachelor student or a long-term professor, I don't really care. Mm-hmm. It's not important. And then I want to know what people are thinking about archaeology, what they're doing in archaeology. And kind of the other side of it is one of the things from doing field work for so long and working on some really cool projects and with some great archaeologists who also turned out to be really good cooks. That's how I learned how to cook, was in the field. For us, it was always such a big moment to have a meal at the end of the day. And so I really wanted to kind of express that to the general public, because they really don't know about the lives of archaeologists. And this is kind of one facet of mm-hmm. archaeological life is cooking and eating. And we do talk a lot about food. And my co-creator, Chris, I mean, she and I spent lots of times working in the kitchen after field work and preparing meals for everyone. So the end of the program is usually a sharing of a meal and a story, which is another aspect that I'm trying to pull out of the podcast, is storytelling. Mm-hmm. And because there's some great, as everyone knows, there's always some cool, funny stories that happens when you're in the field. So I just want the general public to know all about that.
That's awesome. Everybody knows that's been on a field archaeology project that last couple hours of the day, that's like pretty much dinner is the only thing on your mind. Maybe a shower too. I don't know. They're gonna get, and a beer.
Yeah.
A shower, a beer, and a dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. I actually worked with, kind of worked with April a little bit out at their field project in southeastern Colorado this summer. And it was, you know, it's so hot out there. All you want to do is get back into the air conditioning and make dinner and get it going. Well, they had somebody making dinner for them, which was really nice. So
that's nice.
Well, we actually have the home economics teacher from the local school cooking for us. And so the cuisine that we get is truly monumental. We get fabulous things like chicken fried steak, which I think you're only allowed to eat after working a full day in the field. So
yeah.
So I mean, it's kind of a funny, well, here's the story part. Can I tell a story?
Go ahead. Yeah.
About how this all, well, it's not so much how it happened, but this happened years ago when I started doing my PhD project, and I was working up in Norway, and I got up there, up to Tromsø University, and I was working with Bjarnar Olsen. He was running this project. And before we went out into the field, we had to stop by the local international food shops because they have all the ingredients that you want. And mm-hmm. and he's a phenomenal cook. So, and the rule was that he does all the cooking. So we stopped before we drove our like 6 or 8 hours to start our survey project. We stopped there. He collected everything that he needed. And that was like probably the most important thing to grab is all that stuff. And then we drove out to the field and we did our survey work. But every night we would have like Thai food. So we'd be in these cabins that no one was, we'd just rent these cabins. We're not even rent them, but they're just cabins out there that no one was using that he had got permission to use, no electricity or running water. And he'd be creating like a Thai meal for us. And it was really
nice. Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Yeah. So what are some of your most memorable episodes, like guests you've had on, and probably independent of that question is most memorable recipes, because maybe somebody had better archaeology than the recipes. Well, first, do you try all the recipes?
I do. I do. I try all the recipes. I try to when I can. But I've got about three quarters of them. So
nice.
And it's good.
There were some really interesting looking recipes on there, like ones for bone marrow and things like that. That might be a little more challenging to try out.
Yeah, well, that's my favorite one. That's the one I did try.
Really?
Yeah, that's the one I recently tried that one and I liked it. That was from Bill Schindler from at Washington College. But and he was a great he was a great guest. I mean, they're all great, of course. Every guest brings something different. And I really liked his talk because he was one of the one of the few professors that actually talked on the show, has actually been talked on the show. And now I know why he is so popular. And I think last year he won the National Distinguished Professor Award because he's so engaging. And I learned so much when he was talking. It was really, I really enjoyed that conversation. And the flip side of that conversation with him was, he's an academic, but he also was really open and talking about bringing non-academic archaeologists, the amateur archaeologists, the guys who are doing, a lot of the other things like doing the flint work. And, he was talking about all these people that he had run into when he lived in, I think it was in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and kind of paying respect to them and acknowledging that their contribution to archaeology, which I thought was really, really great. And he was just saying that he's learned from these guys. And so that was a really, I really enjoyed that conversation.
Nice. And how many episodes have you done so far?
22.
Awesome. We were talking before the show. I've listened to the last one. And I'll tell you what, I wasn't familiar with the name of the recipe. But when he started describing it, your guest, Javier, when he started describing the recipe, I was like, oh, this sounds kind of like tomato soup or something like that. Like, I wasn't sure what he was talking about. And I'm looking at the pictures on the website, which is great that you have the photographs there. And then you can link in and get the recipe. But it's called, Salmorejo? So I don't know how to pronounce that.
I can't remember. I have to look it up.
Yeah. But it looks delicious, and I want to make it now. So
yeah, that one I have not made yet, and I'd like to. And it was interesting because you said it sounds like tomato soup, and he was saying, I'm not sure if it's in the podcast or not, or after, the kind of the post podcast when you're chatting afterwards.
Right.
And he was saying that his American colleagues were saying, oh, it's just like tomato soup. Here, try some tomato soup. And he tried it and he said it was good, but he's like, it's not at the same level.
Right.
Those are my words. Those probably weren't his words, but he was basically saying, yeah, it's a little different than what he's introducing and sharing with us.
Nice. Well, have you ever thought about putting all these recipes? I mean, you've got 22 right now. Maybe producing an annual recipe book or something like that, even online. Because I think, and I would even, you know, get the permissions, of course, and maybe include a little bit of the story, like a little written story, and then a recipe book to, you know, a recipe to go with it. That would be fantastic. I think I'd buy that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of actually, that's funny you bring this up, because that's actually the original idea was. Mm-hmm. was going to go that route. And I was talking with a cousin of mine, and he's a writer, and he publishes children's books. And he suggested that I start with a blog first. Mm-hmm. And he said, and he worked as an editor for years, and he said, you know, they get tons of cooking books and things like that. So why don't you create, create a following and see how that goes. And originally I had started off with a blog, and, you know, it's really hard to get people to write stuff. So I felt like it's way easier to get people to talk. People love to talk. So it's just easier. So I went that route, and thinking that, yeah, eventually I'll transform the podcast into some type of book. And that's, mm-hmm. and I'll, you know, probably have to do self-publishing or something, mm-hmm. whichever way. I have no idea right now how I'm going to do it, but yeah, that's definitely on the agenda.
It seems like Amazon's print on demand service, where you pretty much do all the work, or maybe for a couple hundred bucks hire an editor, you know, to sort it all out. But their print on demand service sounds like a good way to go, because you don't have to have, like, you know, 300 of them printed and then have them sitting in your garage and worry about selling them. You just have them online, and then they, I actually got a book from an archaeologist that did that up in Canada just like 6 months ago, and it's freshly printed. Right when you hit the purchase button, it prints, binds the book. It's an actual book, and then sends it to you. And it says it has the copyright date, but it also has the printing date in there, which was, I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, that's really cool. I'll check that out.
Yeah. It was pretty neat.
Because usually in academic publishing anyways, you have to do all the work anyways.
Right.
I mean, I remember, we did a book some years ago, and yeah, we had to do everything. And mm-hmm. I was thinking to myself, who's winning out of this deal?
Well, and not only that, but I mean, the cut that you end up getting, you know, I mean, I wrote a book for Left Coast Press, which is now owned by Routledge, and I get like 8%, you know what I mean?
Right.
And this isn't Harry right. Potter, so I don't have the heavy book sales that really make that 8% worth it. But
right.
You know, so I mean, we all do this because we love it, right? But it's nice to see a little bit of a kickback, and I think self-publishing is probably the way to go in 2017. It's way easier than it used to be. So, but
yeah, true.
Yeah. But this is about archaeology. So, how do you I'm curious as to how you, I mean, you've probably got a pretty huge network, given where you've worked and what you've done, of people that you can call on. But how do you decide who you're going to do on an interview? Do you think about the recipe first, or do you think about the archaeology first and then ask them if they've got anything fun that they cook?
It's whoever answers the email.
I know that game.
whoever answers that email. And generally what I find, this is just advice for everyone, even whatever you're doing in mm-hmm. life, you know, using your network helps. And then, you know, using, you know, people, what I usually do is I ask whoever I've interviewed, I ask them for contacts, mm-hmm. and that makes the intro a lot easier to whomever I'm going to contact. So, and that's happened a lot in several cases with this podcast, is just using what I have, my contacts. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny though, when you contact people who think, you know, that you're close with, or you've known for years, and they don't get back to you, then you realize, okay, maybe we're not so close.
right.
But generally it's just using a network. And I've tried some cold calls, you know, cold emails, and mm-hmm. that's worked, you know, maybe 50% of the time. And then, you know, and sometimes it doesn't work. Whatever is going on in people's lives, I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of people just don't want to do it. I do notice, though, that there is an age difference on the people who accept yeah. going on the podcast. I think younger people, younger academics are more open to this type of format. I've reached out to older archaeologists, and yeah, some of them haven't really been that interested in it, because it's a little bit, maybe it's a little bit more foreign for mm-hmm. them.
Well, and then there's the technology aspect. I've noticed that with some people. I mean, I've interviewed, I guess, hundreds of people probably at this point in the last 4 years of podcasting, and yeah, and it's you definitely see the curve there for how many people I have to use my Skype credit for and just call them rather than have them figure out Skype and make sure it's updated.
That's
always an issue.
Yeah.
Well, this is really great. So what are some of the other, I'm interested in some of the other, like your favorite experiences on this podcast. And after the break in a couple of minutes, I want to talk about sort of some of the feedback you've had from it. But until then, can you think of any other that are really your favorites that, that maybe listeners to this show are finding you for the first time can go and check out?
As far as the most recent one, I'm actually editing that one right now, and I'll publish it probably later today, is with Sonali Gupta. And she's great. I mean, really interesting person. She's out in University of California, Los Angeles, and she worked on some Greco-Roman sites doing pottery and doing some ethno-archaeology stuff, which was fascinating what she did. But she herself is fascinating because she started out as a lawyer and a real, courthouse lawyer. That's her original background. And then she got into archaeology. She was a lawyer back in India. And then when she came to the United States, she was still practiced law. And then she, followed her passion into archaeology. And the conversation, our conversation was really, she was a really interesting person and talking about just kind of going with what you have, working with, following your passions, which is a good idea. If you can make money at your passions, that's even better. it's like, so, you have to be realistic.
Yeah.
But, It was a really, really great interview just to talk to her about. Talked about archaeology, and there's, talk about life a little bit and kind of the struggles that we all have. And, in general, like a lot, it's always interesting. The post talks are always, I enjoy the most. I don't record them, but they're really great. And just to hearing other people talk about just, because we all, as archaeologists, we all kind of have the same struggles in a little bit in the same way,
right?
General way, if you're a contract archaeologist, you're always looking for work. If you're your new PhD, you're looking to try to get a job anywhere. And it's really kind of it's a weird way to say it, but it's nice to hear other people are going through the same things and kind of share those experiences. So you don't feel so alone.
Indeed. I agree. All right. Well, we're going to go to a break real quick. And when we come back, we'll talk about a little more of your motivations behind this and maybe some of the feedback you've received from it. All right. Back in a second.
Would you like to get more involved with archaeology? Are you looking for volunteer or internship opportunities? Are you already working on community or personal archiving projects and could use some helpful hints? Check out the Ideas Portal, sponsored by Codify. Visit ideas.codify.com, a free and open community tool, and share your ideas, knowledge, and advice on select topics that will lead to vibrant opportunities and initiatives for all aspects of archaeology, from fieldwork to public service. All ideas are welcome, so visit ideas.codify.com today and make your voice heard. That's ideas.codify.com.
All right, we're back. And, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Colin, first off, I just started teaching with the Center for Digital Archaeology. We've done one webinar on this so far, but it's called, the webinar is called Podcasting for Archaeology, with a focus on really how easy it is to get started depending on what you want to do, and then the public archaeology benefit that you can get from that, because podcasts are accessible to everyone, and they're 99.9% of the time free. There are some paid ones you can get out there, but all the stuff you find on iTunes, Google, whatever, they're all usually free. So they're really accessible for the whole entire planet, as long as you can hear, which, is one thing. There's the deaf people out there. There are transcription services, so they can read it. But most people can hear, and they can get good benefit from your podcast. So I want to hear, when you decided that maybe a podcast was the way to go, what was the route you took to that? Did you already have some gear? Did you have to go out and buy some stuff? You know, what was your setup and learning curve for that?
So, you know, well, like I said earlier, what really pushed me to going towards podcasting is the fact that it was really hard to get people to write stuff for the blog. And the other side of it is I really like talk radio. Like, I love talk radio. I could listen to talk radio, all types. I don't really care what it is. I'll listen to it. I used to listen to, when I worked in Norway, I used to listen to this show called Coast to Coast AM.
Oh, yeah.
And do you know this show?
I know that show.
It's a great show. Yeah, it's such a great show. But it was so, on the East Coast of the United States, I could never listen to it because it was so late. But over in Norway, you know, I get to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, I could listen to the show. And then my colleagues would be like, what are you listening to? You know, talking about aliens and werewolves. I was like, this is great radio.
Yeah.
So I have really a lot of respect for radio. I think it's such a great way to communicate and reach out to people. Mm-hmm. So kind of get into the podcast was just, you know, kind of a natural, you know, knowing that it was hard to get people to write. And I was a little bit apprehensive. I was a little bit nervous about the whole thing, and, you know, still am for the most part. but getting that all started, I just started Googling things. And then I came across this podcaster. His service is really, you know, he talks to entrepreneurs, and he also runs his podcast is also talking about, you know, getting how to get your podcast going. And can I plug him? Can
yeah,
I say
go
his
ahead, because I probably listened to him.
So it was John Lee Dumas.
Oh yeah, and he's an entrepreneur on fire.
Yes, entrepreneur on fire. And you know, it was really interesting listening to his, you know, because his podcast, and basically he sets you up with what to do and how to do it. And that's how I followed it. I followed his formula, because there's so many different ways to go. And I just said, you know, I listened to his podcast. I never listened to his podcast, but I listened to how to set up a podcast. Mm-hmm. So, and that was a free sign up for like 8 or like 15, you know, that's what I did. And, and so I bought, you know, I bought a mic. I have, I can't remember the brand. I can tell you later, but, you know, and then I downloaded Audacity, which is free software.
Yep.
And then I started using, and then I had Skype, and then I started using, Pamela, call recorder for Skype. Mm-hmm. And that's worked out fine. Only recently did I change out of, you know, using Pamela call recorder, and, you know, now I use Voice Meter Banana, which is kind of a virtual mixing board. So I can plug in, you know, I have the inputs from my mic, and then from Skype, and then I can bring in music as well. And then it's the recorder's right there as well. Mm-hmm. And it seems a little bit more stable. and then I bought, you know, recently I just bought new, cause I was using earbuds, and then now I bought, ear headset.
Yeah.
Yep. And I bought a boom, and I don't know what it's called, but that there's a thing between the mic and me. It's
your pop filter.
Pop filter. Exactly. Yeah. And that's been the best thing. Actually, the pop filter, that blew me away.
Nice. Yeah, I'm running one of those right now. I've been podcasting for 5 years now. And
wow.
I know. And just in the last like month and a half, I finally got a boom to get this really crazy setup off my desk so I could actually access my keyboard and mouse while I'm doing all this.
Yes.
And I mean, my God, I can't believe how long I waited to do that. And the boom actually came with a pop filter that I can stick in front of the mic. And so I've only been doing that for about a month. But, you know, that's kind of the whole point of all this is, you know, you did a little bit of research and you bought a little bit of gear. You don't have to buy that gear over again. The initial outlay is as much. I mean, you can spend thousands of dollars or you can spend $100. You know, I mean, it really just... really just depends on how much you want to get into it. But I would say anybody that wants to try something like this, spend as little money as you can, because you can always upgrade later if it's something you want to keep going. Because it is, you know, as you'll admit, Colin, I'm sure the biggest commitment to this is not financial, it's time. Because
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, every podcast, I think the one I listened to that you did last was just under 30 minutes or something like that. But that 30 minutes involves, you know, sending out the emails, setting up the audio, the pre and post talking, and then, you know, editing and show notes. It's just all
the
things.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Show notes. That's good. I don't even do that. But I mean, I had to get up for that one. He's in Madrid. So I was up. I was up at 3:30 in the morning to call him up. So, you know, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of time and invested in doing each podcast.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You mostly talk to academics, it sounds like, on your podcast. And I mean, they could really be anywhere in the world, you know, you've got to be ready for that. It's only rarely that we've interviewed people in other countries. Like I remember we had Australia one time, but I have like four co-hosts for that podcast, and they're spread out all over the country, all over the United States. So he actually accommodated us and got up at, I think, 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was to do that podcast. So it was pretty amazing. But I think you're right too, with the aspect of blog versus podcast, it's way easier to get people to just talk and have a conversation rather than to write. It's way easier for me to do that. I had a blog that was going strong until I really kicked off the podcast. And then the podcast network that we started 2 years ago, I've all but stopped blogging on that because I simply don't have the time, and I feel like my opinions are out there enough on like the four shows I'm on a week.
Yeah, so, yeah. Right.
People great. Get enough of me and my opinions. So.
No, I mean, it's great. Yeah, I saw your stuff. I mean, it's good. And it's a lot of fun. Like, I really enjoy talking to people. I used to play like a game. So I lived in Norway and I lived here, and I'd come back to the United States, you know, around Christmas time. And yeah, I didn't really have that many friends around here. So I'd just go to the local bar, and I'd always say to myself, okay, you're going to stay. Once you hear a good story, then you have to go home. And I'd be like, yeah, okay. But mm-hmm. every night, every time, not that I went there every night, but I went once a week, something like that.
It's coming out now.
you know, I'd go there and I just have like a great conversation with whoever, like, doesn't matter. Could be a fisherman, could be anyone. And, you know, some people always had a great story to tell. So I'm like, really, yeah. Like, it's just great to hear what people have to say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, archaeology is all about, it's all about storytelling and about listening to the stories as well and fitting that into the narrative, I think. So, you know, that's why it's great that your podcast format is talking about the archaeology and really, you know, in the way that we do storytelling and then having the recipe after that. I like that. I like that format a lot.
Well, thanks. Thanks.
I think it's interesting. One of the things you mentioned is that you wanted to kind of bring forward the lifestyle of the archaeologist through kind of not only the research that we do, but the food ways that we get engaged in, and kind of help the public understand what it is we do through this medium. Do you think you're having a lot of success with that? What's your kind of listening audience like? Do you know?
I actually do. I mean, I think I have a general idea as far as the listeners now. And So I had an idea of, like, as far as the percentages, mostly females for one. That listen to the show. And as far as feedback, I get a lot of feedback from other archaeologists who really like it. I don't really get any feedback so much from the general public. And the little bit I have has been always very positive. The one thing that kind of changed the format of the show a little bit was when I first did when I had done the very first podcast, or maybe it was the second podcast, I had a buddy of mine who's not an archaeologist. He's a kind of entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Listen to the podcast, and I got feedback from him. You always want to get, like you guys were, what we're kind of talking about is, you know, you want to get feedback from the general public. You know, whatever product you're doing, you want to get feedback. Yep. And so even though it was coming from one person, yeah, I kind of took it, you know, as kind of a blanket thing, because he kind of is a, you know, all around guy and all that. So his comment was, why do I care about somebody who's never had a job? I want to learn something. So why don't you think about that? And I was like, okay, yeah. Cause I was like, okay, you got a point. You know, I was interviewing a friend of mine who's really a fantastic archaeologist, but we were just talking about stories and he had a great story, but, he had a good point, which was if he's going to listen to a podcast, he wants to learn something new. Mm-hmm. So that's when I kind of, you know, it's, you know, the pivoting part of any business is that was a pivot for me, was getting that feedback. Cause mm-hmm. I felt like it was a strong sentiment, you know, feeling about it. So I was like, okay, this is, I gotta pivot and change the way I present this podcast.
Yeah.
I think that's really useful. I always use my husband as that guinea pig. I call him the everyman because he's not an archaeologist and he's picked it all up by hanging out with archaeologists. And so it's nice to have someone you can just say, does this make sense? Are there words here you don't understand? Does this matter to you?
Mm-hmm. Right. 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 That's very critical. And I think that is the point of everything is, and people have to be open. You can't be afraid to pivot, right? In business, you do this all the time. You have to be able to change. You got to get feedback. You know, one of the things that this John Lee Dumas talked about was create your avatar and think about who you're podcasting to, right? So who's the person you're podcasting? So I had this, an idea of a person. It's a real person. He's the English guy who lives in Australia, and I've known him for a long, like almost 20 years. So he was my avatar. But then, as I mentioned earlier, then I got my feedback of who's actually listening to the show, and he wasn't my avatar. Like my avatar was probably is a female, probably, you know, most likely university educated, between, you know, late 20s to mid 30s. That's what mm-hmm. I think would be my general audience for the podcast. But it's interesting to just get that feedback, both, you know, from people and also from, like, say, mm-hmm. I forget what the analytic part page is, but it comes back when you're on your Facebook page and tells you.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you use Libsyn too for your hosting. They have some pretty good analytics.
Yeah, maybe it was Libsyn. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's Libsyn. Yeah. I use Libsyn for my hosting. I forgot about that part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They have some. I just recently dropped them. I tried them out for about a year on one of my shows, but if I can't put all what's at the end of January going to be 18 of our podcasts on there, then I don't want to do it. So the only reason I dropped them, because it's at $20 a month for the package that I was using. I mean, that gets a little pricey when you got a ton of shows, but for just one, that's actually really good. I love their stability and their and the stats that they give you back. And, you know, another note on comment, I hear John Lee Dumas say that all the time. And you know, the interesting thing about his show, for people that have never heard of Entrepreneur on Fire, is, you know, he has a very strict show format. You know, he's very specific questions that he asks in a very specific order. I mean, there's chat and there's back and forth, but he really kind of keeps it going. And it's usually less than 30 minutes. And one of the reasons he does that is because he has a podcast every day. And I mean, every day of the week, 365 days a year, there's a show, and it's a new show and it's not a repeat. And the way that he's able to do that is he batch schedules episodes. Like, he'll record 15 or 20 in one day and then be done with it. And I think at this point, since he's always saying it, he's got a 6 or 7 figure business doing this, because he does other things as well. I'm pretty sure he has an editor and somebody that does all that other hard work for him. And all he does is probably find the people and then do all the recording. And so that makes it a little easier. But going back to your comment about content, you know, you want to learn something with your podcast. That's really hard actually for me to do, because, you know, and I appreciate you, you know, yours comes out when you want it to come out. You're not on a strict schedule, which is actually really good, because then you can focus and you say, well, I'm not pressured to put out something that's subpar. I can wait until I have something I really like that's good, and then put that out to your audience. All of our shows on the APN are on a schedule, and that makes it tough to figure out who your audience for these shows are, and to find the right interviews and to find the right topics. Because, like, for example, when I'm on the CRM Archaeology podcast, I don't mind talking about jargon. I don't mind not explaining acronyms and doing different things like that, because I'm pretty sure our entire audience is CRM archaeologists. I mean, why else would you be listening to that crazy show if you weren't a CRM archaeologist? But this show we intend for general audiences. So if a guest comes on and they are speaking about techniques or terms or something like that that I feel like the general audience might not know, I'll have them explain those sorts of things. So you really have to know, you know, knowing who your audience is a really good exercise to think about. And then hopefully you get some analytics and some feedback like you did, and you can actually find out who your audience is, and then maybe, you know, tailor your comments or the way you talk to them. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And I was honestly trying to do what John Lee Dumas does, but I was doing it like a weekly basis, and I took it as his advice, which was stack them all up.
Oh, yeah.
This was before I actually launched it. So I had like 10 ready to go when I launched, and it was great. Mm-hmm. And then you hit like I hit like some snags, and it was just like, and then it's just like, then I went back into doing field work, and then I was just like wiped out like every day. And I was just like, oh my God, I got to do a podcast. And I, you know, it was like, and I was trying to get one out once a week. And I've been trying to, that's what I've been really trying to do, but it's been very difficult. And, mm-hmm. you know, this autumn when I got out of the field, then I picked up some more work, and then it was just like, oh God. So, you know, having a schedule, I think, is a good thing. And that's, I'm actually trying to be on a schedule. It's just not happening.
April,
so,
and I,
but
April,
I commend you on you guys keeping your schedule, because that's great. I mean, that's what you really want to do. So I'm a slacker.
Well, I'll tell you
you're preaching to the choir too.
You really are.
Oh, you're definitely preaching to the choir. We started with a backlog and have slowly worn it down. I think that's the nature of things like blogging and podcasting is you start, yeah. you know, you need to be regularly producing content in order for people to follow and kind of keep up on it. But it's actually really, really challenging to do that because we all have lives. And mm-hmm. For a lot of us, this isn't our jobs. This is something we do because we enjoy it and we want to share. So yeah, Chris and I understand.
Yeah. Good.
We do. I mean, as if you're listening to this episode as the audience and you're listening to it on the day that it came out, it's mid January, some time frame. I don't have the exact date on that, but you know, just to put that into perspective, right after we're done with this interview, April and I are recording another episode, which is coming out tomorrow, which will be December 30th, the 31st, December 31st, or New Year's Eve episode. We're doing these backwards just because of timing, but also because that's a more timely episode for that time frame. But when you're putting one out every 2 weeks, that backlog gets destroyed pretty quickly if you don't stay on top of it. So hopefully this episode with you will help us get back on track.
Good. No, yeah. I'm happy.
No. All right. Well, we're gonna take our final break real quick, and then we'll come back and wrap up this discussion with Colin all about cooking for archaeologists and podcasting and public archaeology. Back in just a second.
All these things we make no apology for the study of archaeology, but we don't do dinosaurs.
Did aliens build Stonehenge? Did the Easter Island statues walk? Did the Vikings colonize Midwest America? What does mainstream archaeology have to say about all of this? Listen to the Archaeological Fantasies podcast and learn about popular archaeological mysteries. Hoax or fact? Learn to tell the difference with Dr. Kenneth Fader and co-host Sarah of the Archie Fantasies blog. Check out the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/Archie Fantasies and get ready to think critically. Let's get back to the show.
Funny beady blokes, you will see, are a staple of archaeology.
All right, we're back. And something I wanted to ask you, Colin, last segment, but we ran out of time, was a little bit more about feedback. We talked about feedback a little bit and stuff that you've heard, but from a public archaeology standpoint, you mentioned your friend wanting to learn something from your podcast. Have you had anybody approach you that wasn't an archaeologist, it probably would be family and friends and things like that. But that said, you know, hey, I really learned something or anything like that. I know feedback is notoriously hard to get with podcasting. I mean, in years of podcasting, we get very few comments because people just don't have time. It's not that they don't want to comment. Right. They just don't have time. Right. So Have you received anything like that, or even moving forward into like conferences and stuff? I always get people coming up to me at conferences, partly weirdly because they recognize my voice, which is always strange, and they hear me talking in the exhibit hall or something, and they're like,
"That's great."
They're like, "Hey, are you on a podcast?" And then we talk about, you know, what kind of impact it had on them. So have you had anything back like that that kind of keeps you going, or is it like talking into the void sometimes?
Yeah, a little bit, but then every now and then somebody pops up and gives you a little boot bump, right? Like you gave me a bump. Like I was like, all right, cool. Some recognition, because that's, you know, it helps. It keeps you motivated.
It does.
Recognized. This last, when I was in the field, I got a invite to go and do a first I got that invite. There's an invite to do a TEDx talk, mm-hmm. which was great. But then I got this invite to the Southeastern Archaeological Conference to give a talk on public outreach and podcasting, or it was just public outreach. It wasn't about podcasting, but it was just public outreach. Oh, you were there?
Yeah, we were in the book room. We had the booth called Codify with Digital Archaeology. I was in that booth.
Oh my god. I walked through there. I should have. That's funny.
Yeah.
So I went to there. It was like a 3-minute talk, and I was the moderator. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. No one had ever, you know, besides the woman who invited us to the conference. I think when she asked, had anyone ever heard the show? I think in a room of maybe 80 people, I think like 3 people and me put our hands up. So no one really ever heard of it, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. So that was like a nice, interesting interaction. And for me, it was because I never really viewed, I almost don't view doing the podcast as public outreach. I almost view it as just, I mean, it is, but I just don't look at it. You know what I mean? I just don't look at it that way. At this conference, I saw how other people are doing public outreach, and I was like, "Oh, that's really interesting." And I just felt like we're doing, you know, it's a little bit different. I don't know what mm-hmm. it is, but maybe because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I'm also used to, like, when I do excavation, we always have public outreach, and that usually involves, you know, the public comes to the site and you give them a tour and they see stuff, and nobody really, you know, unless you're up on speed on the history of the area or Viking periods or Bronze Age, Stone Age periods, you really don't know what you're looking at. It's just, you know, it's just stuff. So that's generally been my introduction to public outreach, has been through excavation and having open days for school kids and things like that, which usually I end up just kind of either like slinking away and helping people park their cars or making coffee. So that's usually what I do, but I enjoy this medium of like talking to archaeologists.
I mean, if you don't have somebody to make the coffee, what is really the point of being there, quite honestly?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, last time I was like telling the museum director, I was like, oh, you know, I had all these lists of suggestions on how we could make it even better, mm-hmm. you know. I know it is public outreach, but I just, for some reason, I just mm-hmm. as that, I just view it as just having fun and talking to people.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as far as feedback, any more feedback, or like you said, yeah, I don't really get a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, I of course, don't let that keep you down. Like I said, we've got over 1,000 episodes total on the Archaeology Podcast Network now, and I could probably count the number of comments, you know, on just a couple hands that we've actually received. And people just don't have time, like I said, so I don't take it as a personal offense. What I look at is that the number curves on our analytics are going up, which means people are listening and people are interacting. But that being said, I mean, I haven't checked the numbers yet today. I'm kind of waiting until tomorrow. Because I'm really excited about it, but we're on the pace to hit 40,000 monthly subscribers to the APN, and that's across all our shows, not just like one particular show. So but even with those numbers, like, we were at the Great Basin Archaeology Conference here in Reno back in October, beginning of October, and I chaired a session called Technology in the Archaeology in the 21st Century, or something like that, and one of them was Podcasting is Public Outreach, and that's one of the papers I gave. And I had a room of probably, I don't know, 30 people, and I do this every time. I've presented on archaeology a lot of times at the SAAs the last few years, at different conferences, and I always start by asking people who knows what a podcast is, and most people these days raise their hand that they at least know what one is. And then I say, do you listen to any shows on the Archaeology Podcast Network? And even at the at the GBACs when we had, you know, we were at about 35,000 monthly subscribers, you know, like four hands went up. I'm like, you guys are archaeologists. What are you listening to? but somebody's listening. And that's, I think, really the point is as long as one person's listening, I don't care who they are, but as long as one person's listening and maybe they tell somebody else about it, or maybe they squirrel away a little piece of knowledge that they can pull out at some point and really, you know, dispel some sort of myth or tell somebody, no, that's not actually how it is. I heard it on a podcast and it's actually this way. And that's, I think that thought that's actually happening is kind of what keeps me going. And really keeps me going. That being said, when we do get feedback, I just got an email yesterday. It was probably the best email I've ever received for podcasting. And it was just this person who was, you know, she was not even in archaeology. She'd gotten out of it and she was working another job and kind of feeling down about her decisions, even though she was making good money and had great benefits, which you don't always get in archaeology. So she was enjoying that. And then she found our podcast and learned through listening to that for the last couple of years that, you know, it's not always a linear path. It's different steps you can take, and you can get out of it for a while and come back in and be there waiting for you and all these things. And now she's back in archaeology and applying to grad school. And it's because of listening to the CRM Archaeology podcast for the last couple of years. And I was like, that is fantastic. I love hearing that kind of feedback. But sometimes it takes a couple of years before you can get that kind of feedback.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's a great story, I think. And I think what you exactly said is being archaeologists, like, it's not a linear path. You know, we all can't be professors at some Ivy League college, right?
Right.
I mean,
the
jobs aren't there. It's just the... Mm-hmm. You know, so the openings aren't there. So it's, you just have to make it, you have to make your own thing. Like you guys have done mm-hmm. things, and that's really cool. And using the technology that we have and kind of taking it to the next level.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know, I was wondering, have you thought about, we talked a little bit early on in the first segment about, kind of where you get your guests and things like that and sending out emails. But I would like to make a suggestion to you to check out some of the CRM-related groups on Facebook, like Archaeo Field Techs. I'm a moderator over there. There's almost 2,000 members, I think. And then the North American Archaeological Tech Forum is a little bit smaller, but still has a lot of field technicians. Because I'll tell you what, I've seen some pretty crazy meals, and I've seen pretty fantastic meals made on like CRM camping projects. I think I was just telling somebody this the other day. We had one project where at some point on one of the 10-day sessions out in the middle of nowhere in central Nevada, it ended up being like 7 guys out there camping. I don't know how that worked out. We had women on the crew before, and I can't remember what led to this, but it was like 7 guys. And on one night, we had all being cooked mostly on shovels around the campfire, like tinfoil covered shovels. We had like 8 different kinds of meat cooking, and we didn't plan that, but it was an interesting night. And it was just, you know, different things like that. So it's definitely an untapped resource. And I think just putting some feelers out over there and saying, hey, you got any interesting recipes, start the conversation that way. And then they've all got stories. So,
all right. That's great. Yeah. I mean, cause I'm a little, light on getting North American archaeologists on the show. Yeah. So that's a great idea. Great idea. I'll do that.
I'm sure April's got some good field stories too with that.
Oh yeah. We have a really good secret family recipe for ramen with Asian vegetables.
Nice.
Which is our go-to field food. And it's literally packages of oriental flavor ramen. Because
yep.
That's the one. And cans
and frozen vegetables.
Well, it's not frozen. It's those canned like water chestnuts and bamboo sprouts, and yes, you know, to keep with the theme. And that's that's one of our outback field foods.
That's great. That's great. I love to hear that. Yeah, the two things I really hate are those canned water chestnuts and those canned bamboo shoots. God, again.
Well, you mix them with ramen, and it just elevates everything to a new
level.
Nice.
No, awesome. I was going to say that another good source, and this is also a plug, is that the SAA has a student Facebook page for its SAA student members. And, you know, I'll say that students are always looking for chances to talk about research and promote themselves. So, as I'm sure you've run into as you're talking about the composition of who's willing to talk to you and get back to you. And
yeah, that's true. I do get a lot of PhD students who are Yeah, great guests. Great guests. Yeah, yeah.
A lot of ramen recipes with those PhD students, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, you could probably make an entire field cookbook on cooking with ramen, like the different ways.
Yes, you probably could, yeah.
Who would buy it?
Yeah, well, I guess I think it would be a copy passed around to other field archaeologists. Like one copy would get purchased, and then it would just get photocopied and passed around.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Nice, exactly. Nice. Yeah, April. Both April's parents are archaeologists, so I'm sure she grew up on field cooking. So it kind of explains a lot, really. It does.
Oh, wow.
I'll eat anything. Almost anything is considered an edible dish in my household.
That's awesome. All right. Well, as we start wrapping up this podcast, Colin, is there anything that you wanted to let us know about what you've got going on in the future or anything like that, that we want to tell our audience?
No, we're just going to be, continuing kind of pressing forward with getting interviews and publishing those whenever we can. And, Chris, my co-creator, she's going to be working on the Twitter page. We're going to start doing that, trying that out. I'm not really a big fan of it, like just because I got she's running the social media aspect, like Facebook and stuff like that. So
yeah,
we're going to start doing that. So other than that, you know, just trying to, grow and build the audience. That's it. That's the main goal right now, is just trying to grow our audience and
send a good product. Is your co-blogger Chris? It's Christine. What's her full name?
Santos Bond.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is she ever on the podcast, or is she just maintaining the blog and social media side of it?
She's just doing the social media. We had talked about it. We had actually talked about maybe doing a bilingual one. Like she lives in Barcelona. So we were thinking about doing one in Spanish as well, but she really didn't want it. She thought it would just be better if I stuck with being the host and interview people. And she tries to get, guests, and a lot of the guests, at least half of them, she's gotten, so that's been great and
awesome.
And you know, it's good to have a sounding board, you know, someone to kind of be in there with you, to help you kind of. It's always good to have someone else by side. So
you've got a producer. That's awesome. That's what she is.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good. So we just kind of like sound each other, you know, give each, you know, I throw out my ideas where I want to go with it, everything, and and that's how.
Mm-hmm.
And it works out well. Works out well.
Nice.
So we're just getting more. It's just all about the content, right? So. Mm-hmm.
So it's not your podcast, but one of the things you briefly mentioned is a TED Talk.
Yeah.
Is that something our audience can track down?
Yeah, it's on YouTube right now. It just came out, and I guess you just have to Google my name.
Yep, I found it actually. And if you're interested in watching his TED Talk, it's about 10 minutes, I think. And you can, the link will be in the show notes for this podcast.
Oh, awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. That was really interesting. What do you think? What was the TED Talk experience like? I mean, I know it's a TEDx, so they're typically a little smaller. Was there a big audience?
Yeah. No, it wasn't very, it was big enough. It was big enough for me. For some reason, yeah. Yeah, I think it was like 150 people. So that was fine. It was interesting because it's 10 minutes and they're really strict on those 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And we did prep. You know, I prepped like a month over, like, yeah, a month at least, you know, going back and forth with the organizers with it. And then the day before, you have another prep. And they do change your stuff. I mean, some people they didn't, but a lot of people, I talked to the other people speakers, and they said, yeah, they changed stuff around. So you're like, oh my God, you just rearranged everything. And so afterwards, you know, you all went through the same experience. And so then there's like this really nice community feeling afterwards. And some of them were, yeah, the ones I saw, I mean, everyone was good. And I did manage to see a few of them, and what people do, how they do it, and how they present themselves in front of an audience, and the confidence that they have. It's really impressive. So,
well, I imagine podcasting helped a little bit with that, because this isn't like a TED Talks, of course, aren't like your typical conference presentation where you're most of your people are standing up there rigidly holding on to the lectern and just reading a paper and not making any eye contact whatsoever and, you know, awkwardly clicking their slides. You definitely looked like you had some preparation because you were up there, you know, you weren't staring down at the thing, you know, and it was really good. And that takes a lot of work to get ready for.
Yeah. I think I read that thing 50 times. And to be honest with you, it was real. I could not. They wanted you to memorize it, but I just couldn't memorize it. I couldn't get up there and do it on the fly. I just felt like it. There was so much information that you wanted to get out in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so they want it professional. And I was like, okay. And, you know, so I did have like a teleprompter, and it was kind of funny because it was just a computer screen, you know, it was just my presentation. And a few other people had this same thing, but the woman who was doing it, who ran the, she was in charge of all the presentation. She was great. But as I was talking, she's kind of scrolling down, and every so often, like, it would readjust itself, so the words, everything would start moving, and in my heart, I'm like panicking, like, oh my god, don't be that guy,
right?
Don't be. You know, but maybe you get more. Maybe if I had a complete meltdown, you'd get a lot of hits on your YouTube.
You probably would. Yeah, I don't think they're the kind of hits you want, but you'd get a lot of hits. For
no,
sure.
Exactly. Yeah, you get a lot of hits. Like,
be sure to scramble to that. Scramble over to that YouTube channel and get your podcast link in there. All right, well, we're gonna wrap this up. Thanks a lot, Colin, for doing this, and if anybody's interested in anything else from Colin, we've got his website and that TED Talk linked into the show notes for this episode at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology/7 for this episode, so check that out. Colin, again, thanks a lot, and we look forward to many more great podcasts and the hopefully some sort of Kickstarter campaign to come out for the cookbook.
We'll that's a great idea. Too.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks, Chris and April. I really appreciate it. Thanks for everything.
Pleasure having you.
Thanks for listening to the Archaeology Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. You can provide feedback using the contact button on the right side of the website at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology. Or you can email Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Please like and share the show wherever you saw it so more people can have a chance to listen and learn. Send us show suggestions and follow ArcPodNet on Twitter and Instagram. This show is produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network. Opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests of the show. However, the APN stands by their hosts. This show is edited by Christopher Sims of the Go Dig a Hole podcast. Go check it out. Check out our next episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, keep learning, keep discovering new things, and keep listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Have an awesome day.
Presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.